Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I bet the assistant producer who picked that song out doesn't even know that the mashed potato is a dance. Today is our annual holiday cooking show, and though Thanksgiving is a time of mashed potatoes, it's also a time of gratitude and appreciation. The problem is we all know somebody like Peppermint Patty from Peanuts.
What kind of a Thanksgiving dinner is this? Where's the turkey, Chuck? Don't you know anything about Thanksgiving dinners? Where's the mashed potatoes? Where's the cranberry sauce? Where's the pumpkin pie?
So not everyone treasures culinary creativity. Joining us to talk about what could please the vast majority is Tricia Wheeler, editor and publisher of Edible Columbus and chef instructor and owner of the Seasoned Farmhouse in Clintonville. Welcome, Tricia.
Well, thanks, Ann.
I think you were here last year just about this time.
I think so.
And Thanksgiving, you know, we know we'll always have some pretty strong traditions. The Peanuts, you know, Thanksgiving show notwithstanding. If I don't make my pumpkin pie, a few nieces in Iowa might not come. They might stop visiting for a holiday. So what, in your opinion, what traditions, if any, are sacrosanct?
You know, my mom's stuffing. I can never make it as good as she can. I think about it. She's taught me, and I still can't do it as good as she does it. That was a favorite. I always loved she would make homemade noodles, and so they'd be draping over chairs and over our dining room, and we'd have all these cloths of noodles the week leading up to Thanksgiving, and that was always a special thing. And she would gather lots of hands in the kitchen and make homemade noodles, and we always had a traditional, but I wouldn't say the canned variety of Thanksgiving, but a traditional Thanksgiving growing up.
If you're just joining us, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And Tricia Wheeler of Edible Columbus and the Seasoned Farmhouse in Clintonville is with us. We're talking about holiday cooking in general. Thanksgiving. And if you have some questions about what you're prepping for Christmas or other holidays, maybe Thanksgiving, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. By the way, we will be talking about Thanksgiving. That's right.
I don't know if I can say it.
which is the once-in-a-lifetime combination of Thanksgiving and the first day of Hanukkah. We'll be talking about that coming up later in the show if you have questions about what to do. What are you now? You're traveling this year, you said.
I am traveling. I have had such a hectic schedule that we thought it was a perfect opportunity to take a family vacation. So we're going to New York and taking our daughter to the Macy's Day Parade. And
oh, right. Great. So. But you can probably find a pretty traditional or some kind of great Thanksgiving meal
there.
You know
what? And we're being really flexible this year because we're doing the parade and at Jean George's restaurant in the morning. So we're going to either cook. We're actually renting a cookbook author's apartment. So I'm hoping it's well equipped. And if I get a wild hair and decide to cook, I can, if we want to go out, and we're just kind of playing it by ear this year.
Boy, that sounds wonderful. I'll look for you in the parade.
Okay.
All right. Let's start out with the whole, everyone, some people diet leading up to the holidays. They get so paranoid nowadays about the food. Fat is good in small doses. It's just fine for you if you exercise and keep it down. What can we do to keep those doses small on Thanksgiving? Do you have any substitutes or any suggestions about how to...
You know, my whole philosophy on cooking is everything in moderation and simple and seasonal ingredients, you know, not overly laden with, you know, butter and cream, but little bits and little doses that add flavor or for a reason. I always think, you know, not over adorning things, picking out, going to the market. I mean, Worthington's Farmers Market will have a fabulous market this week before Thanksgiving.
At the Worthington Mall.
It's a party in there. I think that's been the wonderful move over there.
Agreed.
You can spread out and really shop. North Market's got extended hours on Monday. We can really capture some wonderful ingredients this week. Hills has all their wonderful turkeys. So my philosophy, again, is just really not overdoing it. I don't believe in the canned soup over the green bean casserole. I would rather fresh green beans and, you know, tossed in some shallots and some nice seasonal herbs. But, you know, I understand people's traditions and the way they've always done it. But I think you can lighten it up, too.
One problem with cooking on Thanksgiving, particularly if you're the one doing the turkey, is that people often forget about the other meals, such as breakfast.
Yes.
Which should be something at breakfast, because it usually has to sustain you through the day, into the late afternoon when a lot of people do have the dinner. Do you have any ideas for breakfast?
Yeah, breakfast, combining the holidays this year, like what we were talking about earlier, you might want to start with pumpkin donuts, or you might want to start with fresh, fresh fruit, potato latkes. You could start off with some nice eggs. Starting that first meal off in a nice way is always important. We have a tradition on Christmas. We do beignets, and I supreme all the fruit into the nice segments. So starting with some grapefruit and oranges and things all into a real pretty fruit salad would be nice, with some pomegranate seeds, and, just starting off in a seasonal, light, healthy way would be good.
Right. Miles in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Miles.
Good morning, ladies. How are you?
Fine.
Good.
Very well. Hey, I will be preparing my first turkey next week. I've pre-ordered the bird. It's going to be about 12 pounds. I just want some tips to make this thing worth the money that I'm going to pay for it.
It's your very first turkey you've ever cooked.
First whole turkey, absolutely.
Well, okay, so I tend to cook a turkey like I do a roast chicken. So I do not stuff, I do my stuffing separately. I do not do all the brining and everything else, but with the heritage birds, I do air dry it in the refrigerator so that it dries out and you can get the crispier skin. So leaving it uncovered for about 8 hours, just letting it just dry out a little bit and some of the moisture evaporate. And then the tricky thing about turkeys is that the white meat cooks quicker than the dark meat, and to get everything up to temperature. So I always cook to temperature. So your ultimate would be about a 165. So if you cook to about a 160 and then let it rest properly, you should bring it up to good temperature.
Take the temperature from the thickest part of the bird?
The thickest part of the bird, absolutely. If you can have an instant read in the whole time, you can kind of check it. Depends on the weight of the bird. But if you can bring it up to that 160, you're in good shape. And then you could start at breast side down, turn it halfway through cooking. And then the other important tip is to really let it rest. Heritage birds tend to cook quicker. And so just kind of really keeping an eye on that cooking time.
And tell Miles what you mean by rest.
Rest a good 30 minutes.
Do you want to tent it?
Tent it on a cutting board that you're going to carve it on a little later, but really letting it distribute the juices properly.
So after taking it out of the oven, let it rest for half an hour, 40 minutes?
A good 30 minutes, I think, is perfect. Tented,
okay,
so it keeps the temperature
and
in.
Tent it with some aluminum foil.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. I wanted
good
to ask
luck.
You real quick about your business in Clintonville. You do cooking classes there?
Yes, we do.
All right. Fantastic. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Thanks, Miles. An idea for the stuffing that I like to share, because it works so fantastically, is I do the stuffing outside the turkey now, and I like to make a lot of it because we have a very big group coming. I make this, whatever stuffing I'm going to make now, put it in the pan, the big, big pan, and I cover it with chicken wings.
Yes.
And the fats and all the whatever from the chicken wings and all that poultry flavor. You could get turkey wings, for that matter,
sure,
if you can find them. They're a little harder to find, but maybe at the butcher. And, cover them in it. It cooks down. It's moist. And then take it off for the last 10 minutes so you can crisp it up on top.
It sounds delicious.
So
good tip.
Yeah, because I did miss the moistness.
And the flavor.
The flavor of the juices from the birds.
Yep.
So that's how we did it.
Love that.
Email from Marty. He writes, I have a sweet potato question. The dish I want to make calls for roasting the sweet potatoes for about a half hour to start the cooking and caramelizing process. You then make a syrup to combine with the potatoes and bake the casserole for 30 minutes. Can I roast the sweet potatoes the day before? I will make the syrup and bake the casserole on Thursday.
Absolutely. That's something you can do ahead.
Doing ahead is probably the best thing.
I think so. I hate all the last minute. I like to enjoy my guests when they get there. So whatever you can do ahead, it's the sometimes I do a twice baked potato or, you know, a different potato dish than having to do a mashed potato right at the last second. Just depends what you like. I mean, if you can, you know, have your stuffing cooking, a sweet potato casserole cooking, and cranberry, I like to do mine fresh in the food processor in the morning and let the flavors all come together during the day. So I'm all about what you can do ahead.
I, this year for the first time, well, I've made now make my pumpkin pies with pumpkin that I've roasted in the oven, but I usually do it the morning of everything. Mm-hmm. And now this week I did it ahead and I froze it.
Yep.
And it's okay. Just thaw it completely.
Thaw it completely. Yep.
And pumpkin. Should I get some of the moisture out of it?
Yeah, I think that if it feels loose and wet,
yeah.
I would. I'd kind of mix it up and see if you can push a little moisture out through a colander.
One question I wanted to ask you is, people make sweet potato pie and they make pumpkin pie. Are there other gourds that make good pies? Like, would an acorn squash make a good? What is it about pumpkin pulp that?
I think it's the consistency, and it really takes like the cinnamon, and it takes the other flavors in a really nice way. I don't know if I'd see the other squashes. I brought you this peanut pumpkin squash today, and I was trying all different types of things with this. This was my first introduction. And I tried all different types, souffleing, soup, all these different things. And I came back to loving it, just very simple, cooked in salted water, tossed with a little butter and thyme. So I think each squash has its own little nuance about it.
French peanut pumpkin squash. This is the kind of pumpkin. It's orange, but it doesn't have the ridges on it. And it looks like it has a lot of warts on it.
Embroidery,
sorry.
That's what the French think.
Embroidery. Yeah, okay.
Other
embroidery
people have
pebbles
yeah.
from Acinace.
Yeah.
And that's what you do is you cut the skin off the pumpkin, remove the seeds and inside pulp, then cut the flesh into chunks, bring salted water to boil, add the pumpkin and simmer until soft, and top with butter, sea salt, and thyme.
Mm-hmm.
It looks delicious.
And what's interesting about this is it has a real cucumber smell. It's very fresh, beautiful orange color, and the skin looks thick, but it's really thin. It's not like how hard it is to skin a butternut squashed.
Okay. And there is a photo on... Okay, we have a photo on Facebook of the pumpkin if you want to check it out. Check out Facebook, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and you'll know exactly what we're talking about. We will continue our conversation with Tricia Wheeler, and coming up, Joan Nathan, Jewish food expert and award-winning cookbook author, will join us as well. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Imagine Judah Maccabee sitting down to roast turkey, passing the potatoes to Squanto. And pilgrims in Jerusalem standing with Hasmoneans, got to get this temple cleaned up pronto. Thanksgiving come, let's celebrate across America.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today is our annual holiday cooking show, and the song we just heard was The Ballad of Thanksgivica by Rabbi David Paskin, a song he wrote to celebrate the fact that this year Thanksgiving falls on the first full day of Hanukkah. The two holidays won't overlap again for another 70,000 years. But that's still too soon for Stephen Colbert.
How dare you, Hanukkah? These two holidays have nothing in common. Hanukkah celebrates the struggle of an oppressed people's fight against invading conquerors, while Thanksgiving is about our healthy and nurturing relationship with the Indians.
We're excited to embrace the two traditions, and here to help us do that is award-winning cookbook author and Jewish food expert Joan Nathan. Welcome to the show, Joan.
Thank you for having me.
Food-wise, is this an auspicious meeting of the holidays? Are they compatible?
Well, they are sort of compatible. But don't forget, Hanukkah is 8 days. So what I'm going to do is have my perennial brisket on Friday night, because every Friday night is Shabbat. And I actually already have it in the freezer. anyway, but sweet potatoes can be at both right now.
Okay.
And, I'm not going to do sweet potato latkes. I'm going to do tiny little potato latkes with applesauce and a dried cranberry on top as an hors d'oeuvre at my Thanksgiving as sort of a nod to Hanukkah. And of course you light the candles, and Hanukkah is a celebration of light more than anything else, more than fried food, because olive oil was the oil that was used to light in the ancient world, and you needed that, and it was the end of the olive oil harvest. So we're going to start our Thanksgiving with lighting the candles, and then, of course, then we're going to feast. And the first light of Hanukkah will be on Wednesday night. What I really like about this is that I love Thanksgiving. Hanukkah for me has been, because it's usually so close to Christmas, you can compete with Christmas in any way. And so that this gives Hanukkah, with the sense of light, a place on the table, and it gives its own place. And of course, the next time this is going to happen is 70 years from now.
No, 70,000 years from now.
I don't know. The Lubavitcher calendar showed it was going to be 70,000. Okay, yeah. Well, whatever. It's not going to be in my lifetime.
Exactly. Or mine, you know. It's pretty amazing. We first started talking about this a few weeks ago at Trisha's Seasoned Farmhouse in Clintonville. There was a cooking demonstration, and one of your guests, Trisha, brought it up.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were excited.
I know. I think it's a neat, you know, occurrence. So
right.
Once in a lifetime occurrence. So
exactly.
I think we can all do a nod, I think, this year.
We have talked about schmaltz chicken fat on the show, well, rendered chicken fat, I should say. But can the drippings from the turkey roasting pan be used in a similar way for cooking?
Oh, great idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hadn't thought of that, but a beautiful idea. The thing is that the turkey's not very fat, mm-hmm. So but there will be dripping. So I'm going to make actually chopped liver, which we never make anymore, and I'm going to make it this Hanukkah and Thanksgiving. That's what I'm
Thanksgiving.
That's one of
Thanksgiving. You know, and it'll be over with by the time we figure out how to pronounce it. You know, that's the problem.
Right, exactly.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about Thanksgivica with Trisha Wheeler, editor and publisher of Edible Columbus, and also Joe Nathan, Jewish food expert and award-winning cookbook author. If you have any questions, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Here's an email from Bob that I'd like to get a response from both of you, starting with Joan. He says, for vegetarians on Thanksgiving or Thanksgivica, I prefer comprehensively stuffed acorn squash from the original Moosewood cookbook. I know that recipe. Mm-hmm. Eat your hearts out, turkey lovers. But what sort of suggestions do you have, Joan, for this particular celebration?
Well, you know, I always think about with vegetarians, that there's no centerpiece. Like for non-vegetarians, it's always a meat centerpiece. So I would suggest, of course, lots of Brussels sprouts. I know I'm going to do them roasted Brussels sprouts with carrots and pecans. And, you know, that's something easy and delicious. The idea of kugels, if it's going to be Thanksgivica, you can have whatever kugel you want. Of course, the kugel that we're going to use is my 100-year-old mother's recipe, which we call kugel, but it isn't a kugel at all. It's sweet potatoes, and I'm sure you know this recipe, pineapple and marshmallows on top, but in a casserole. So we're going to do that one, and I cannot not have it.
Uh-huh.
You know, so there are so many vegetables. My sister-in-law insists on having, mashed potatoes, so you can do that. But you don't have to have a centerpiece in vegetarian cooking. So, you know, that's what I would just use lots of different vegetable dishes. to show the plenty of the season.
Tricia, any luck ever with tofurkey or anything like that?
I can't say I've had any experience with it. One thing I've loved that I've been making consistently this season has been a parsnip soup. Mm. And just boiling, very simple, just boiling down the parsnips. You can put with a little bit of a veggie broth, finish it with a little bit of cream, and then I've been doing an apple cider reduction. And I've just been hearing really good reviews about that. Parsnips, I think, have been underutilized and would be a great addition to the Thanksgivica table.
One of my all-time favorites.
I had a parsnip apple soup in my quiche kugels and couscous, and it's one of the most popular recipes mm-hmm. in the book. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, not at all.
That's great.
Mike and
or a yellow cauliflower soup, you know, from the farmer's market. Mm-hmm.
For if you're looking for that color.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Mike in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hi, I'm kind of a self-appointed amateur cook, and I've had some experience with schmaltz and turkey fat and a number of other fats. And I find turkey fat quite delicious. However, I think it's a little more unsaturated, possibly, than chicken fat because it doesn't keep quite as well in the fridge. So if you want to use it as a cooking oil, more or less, or a cooking fat, you'd probably want to use it fairly quickly after you rendered it. And could I throw in an answer to your question about squash for pies?
Yeah.
Okay, well, what I saw in one of the Food Channel, if I can plug it, programs on the history of food, was that when you buy a can of pumpkin, you're almost certainly not buying pumpkin.
Huh.
You're buying Hubbard squash because it's more convenient and profitable to process that, and it's more uniform. And I know from direct experience because I cook pumpkins. I just cooked a pumpkin in the oven the other night, and every pumpkin has to be, in my experience, has to be cooked differently. I start out by baking, but then further cooking in slightly different ways, I won't bore you with it, seem to be necessary because the consistency varies so much.
I agree.
From pumpkin
I agree
to pumpkin. That. And mm-hmm. so I just thought I'd throw that out and hope the value to somebody.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Well, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you too, Mike.
Yeah, I love that guy. Bye-bye.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about holiday cooking. If you have a question or comment for my guests, Joan Nathan, Jewish food expert and award-winning cookbook author, or Tricia Wheeler of Edible Columbus and the Seasoned Farmhouse in Clintonville, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Of course, Joan Nathan has joined us especially because it is the one and only, in our lifetimes, Thanksgivica, where the first full day of Hanukkah falls on the same day as Thanksgiving. A Hanukkah lasts for 8 nights, and although Thanksgiving is one day, it's famous for its leftovers. Joan, can we combine the two for a week with leftover recipes? Are you thinking about that?
Well, actually, I was thinking of turkey tetrazzini and turkey salad. But I think that the leftovers, I just like the leftovers as they are. My favorite meal of the year is always the Friday lunch after Thanksgiving.
Not so much
work. Nothing better than cold, cold challah chestnut stuffing.
I've used challah for stuffing before. It's beautiful. And I remember my dad used to like his stuffing in a sandwich. That was really weird. But you know what? You can't knock whatever it means to different people. You got to go with it.
I remember trying to impress my family with my cooking skills in high school, and I made turkey quesadillas, and they still talk about how bad they were. So we just have our leftovers as is, too. No Mexican turkey dishes.
We have an email from Deb in Clintonville. She says, since I grew up in Japan and my husband in New York, we always have to have sushi along with all the traditional fixings like turkey and cranberry sauce from the can. Now we invite international friends and make a halal turkey and invite everyone to bring side dishes from their country. It is quite a mix of flavors, but so much fun for everyone to share. Who knows what a halal turkey is?
Well, it's basically a kosher turkey, but without the rabbit. But you know, that's a very interesting email because I've done studies of Thanksgiving, and it's all the side dishes. And, well, actually, last week I was speaking at Exeter Academy in New Hampshire, And the kids' ears all perked up when I mentioned all the side dishes, the yolanchi, the stuffed grape leaves, the Vietnamese spring rolls, that everybody wants to be American, but they also want to present their culture. And I think it's great. The pupusas, the tamales, whatever. But it's all what people think of as feasting. And that's what, you know, and so this year there's potato latkes.
I heard this morning, probably on NPR, that the traditional pumpkin pie as we think of it wasn't developed or wasn't discovered or whatever created until 1838. It was by far not a traditional going back to the
right.
You know the original Thanksgiving supper.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had right,
Joan.
Yeah, well, they had like puddings, and you know, mm-hmm. And they had a lot of lobster.
I was going to say lobster, too, at the beginning. Yeah.
And clams and mm-hmm. all that stuff, that good stuff.
Email from Emily. She says, we make mashed potatoes early in the day and put them in a crock pot. It saves time and allows me to enjoy my day more.
Yep.
Good old crock pot. God darn it. Email from...
And, you know, they're also... A lot of people have traditions that they don't start anything till Thursday. And everybody... cooks together, and that's a beautiful thing. I like to do my as much as I can ahead of time, and then on Thursday I'll put the turkey in to go for a long, long walk.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Yeah. I'm not doing the turkey this year. I didn't do it last year either. My mom is bringing it over, and I'm loving it. But I do the stuffing and a lot of other stuff, and I do the pies.
Nice.
And I now make them at least half of them the night before and the other half maybe first thing in the morning.
It's nice to divide it up.
Yeah, yeah. And the turkey takes up the whole oven. It's so, you know, it's such a hog. An email from a listener, my turkey has to travel 80 miles. What is the best way to do this and keep it edible? Also, I have vegans at dinner, and I'm thinking about a glazed acorn squash or stuffed portobello, something like that. Can those be made in advance? Oven space is limited at dinner time. So I guess the question from the listener, I don't know, are you talking about having the turkey cooked? I don't know. They're not there, but... Joan?
I don't know. I think you could probably half cook it and then cook it off later. Why not? You know, it's not going to be as good, but
it's a strategy.
You can do anything.
Kind of like Pieces of April, that movie.
Yeah.
Right.
And then for glazed acorn squash or stuffed portobellos, what's glazed acorn squash? Just baking it in the oven?
I think baking it, and you could put a honey or a syrup or something over it to glaze it at the end. But I think all of that you can do ahead.
Right. Absolutely. And the portobello mushrooms, just stuff them if that's what you're going to do, and then just heat them up.
Right. Joan, a lot of people think of Eastern European food as traditional for Hanukkah, but there is a rich tradition of Spanish-influenced Jewish cooking. What kinds of recipes come out of that?
Well, not necessarily for Hanukkah, because don't forget, Hanukkah is a minor holiday, and it's only become major in countries where there's Christianity as well, so that they're, again, competing or having to feel that there's something that they want to do. But Sephardic, what they would have would be like honey desserts. They would have whatever celebratory meal that they might have for any other Shabbat or for any holiday. But what has come out of the Sephardic tradition, certainly in the state of Israel, is the sufganiyot, which is really the lukumades, which is the Greek donut. And then they put this as a Hebrew word to it, but it's got a Greek base, which is sufganiyot, which means a sponge. And so, you know, the donuts have become very much a tradition in Israel. And they're stuffed donuts rather than donuts dripping with honey. But they're stuffed with everything from foie gras to dulce de leche.
Yum.
To jams. Yeah, to lemon curd. They're pretty good. And on Thanksgiving, what's that? I forget what it's called, but it tastes like pumpkin. It's a lot of the young people are using it now. It's sort of like a graham crackery pumpkin flavor. I can't remember Spookaloos? What it's called.
Oh,
yes, it? Yes, yes.
Yeah, I've been meaning to ask about what that is.
It's all over Paris. Spookaloos.
What is it?
It's like a spread. I brought some back on my last trip. It's like, think of like a kind of a cross between a caramel, a dulce de leche, and a filling, like coming in like in a peanut butter jar.
And
you spread it on things. My daughter dips cookies in it. So it's just a really delicious
Spookaloos.
Spookaloos.
Okay.
Right, exactly.
If you've been wondering. Well, Joan Nathan, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Okay, well, thank you for having me.
Joan Nathan, she's...
And happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
Okay.
Joan Nathan, she's a Jewish food expert and award-winning cookbook author. Tricia Wheeler will stay with me, and we're going to turn our sights to libations for the Thanksgiving holiday. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today is our annual holiday cooking show, and we've been talking about the foods that make Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving-ca special. But let's be honest, for many, no meal is complete without festive libations, especially if you feel any holiday stress coming on. You could just pop open a cold one, but my next guest would rather mix up a sweet one, a tangy one, or a hot one. Joining me now with the latest in celebratory drinks is Brady Konya. He's founder of Middle West Spirits, co-founder, I should say, of Middle West Spirits. Welcome.
Good morning.
And also still with us, Tricia Wheeler of Edible Columbus and the Seasoned Farmhouse in Clintonville. If you have any questions, give us a call, 614-292-8513. I was inspired to invite you today for a few reasons. You have lots of ideas for us. You are a well-regarded local distillery, and you have a kosher product line.
We do.
And
crazy,
that really, huh? You know, rang. I thought, wait, this works. So let's start with the kosher stuff for Thanksgiving. That's right. Thanksgiving.
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 Three times fast.
Thanksgiving. Okay. Yeah. Brady.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. And we often get questions, especially as our footprint as a company extends more nationally around our position on kosher. Because when you think about alcohol, you don't immediately think kosher approved. It's something that as a company we had never initially envisioned in the business. But I'll tell you that over the last couple of years, it really has been customer driven. And we became a kosher certified company. All of our products as a result of customers raising their hands saying, hey, this is something that's important to us.
So how much of your line is kosher?
Everything.
Everything is.
Yeah,
wow.
And I'll tell you, for a company our size, it's a real rarity because kosher isn't just the ingredients of the product, but it's who you source it from and how it's handled. And I think generally speaking, people think if it's meat-free, dairy-free, or wine-free, you're kosher. But in fact, it's the way that it's handled and who handles it as well. So we have a very close relationship with our vod here locally, and the rabbi comes in every month to spot check, just like the FBI.
I think that's probably his favorite job.
Yeah,
right.
Tough job.
That process is really intense. I don't think if you've never gone through something like that, even I think the most commiserate would be organic certification, where you literally have people come in from the outside. They deconstruct everything you do from a recipe from the ground up, look at all of your manufacturing equipment and handling standards, and ensure that again, all of those are approved, and then they look through your supply chain and ensure that all of those are approved as well. And you tell things to your rabbi that you wouldn't tell anyone, right? So we're really proud of that. We're kosher approved all six of our core products, and so far, like I said, the response both here in Ohio and outside of Ohio has been really positive.
Tricia, now with the seasoned farmhouse, are you kind of relating to what Brady's saying? Are you being inspected in ways that you had never been before?
Oh, don't send the inspectors to me. You know, I think I'm falling under the radar. I don't think they knew what to do with me as a recreational cooking school, since we don't have a lot of recreational cooking schools. So I was inspected initially, but not on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, because the kosher thing is more is important.
Yeah, for manufacturing, you actually, most people don't realize this, you actually have to put your synagogue on retainer in order to maintain your certification.
Very interesting. Yeah. This is a whole business we know nothing about, Anne.
Thanksgiving, you know, who would have known? And it would be 77,000 years before we would talk about it again, possibly, on a Thanksgiving cooking show. So, so should we be concerned with pairing to match Thanksgiving flavors, or should we just drink what tastes good, or both?
Well, I really think it's a little bit of both, and that philosophy of when it's your pocketbook and your palate should really drive kind of your selections, whether it's in the holiday or just for fun on a Friday or Saturday night. When I think about the holiday, we always think about transitioning from maybe overly sweet and light from the summer and the fall into more richer, more heartier, more bright flavors with a lot more depth, and certainly from a pairing standpoint, I think it's only been recently, over the last 5 years or so, that you're really starting to hear the culinary side of the business say, "Hey, you can actually pair beautiful spirits with food." It's a bit of a rarity here. It's been going on in Europe for centuries. I think our fascination with vodka cocktails has kind of led us astray from the actual pairing of spirits with food, and only recently we're starting to kind of come full circle with that. And actually having Tricia here, what a great accompaniment. Tricia and I have done spirit pairing dinners before together with great success.
Okay, so the first on your list of favorite Thanksgiving drinks, because you sent us a list.
We did.
I want to go to Brady's house.
No, and then we will all leave here and go straight to Brady's house. Is Pabst Hollow.
Yeah.
Did I pronounce it properly?
You did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So Pabst Hollow. So the basis of this really originated. This is a new kind of holiday cocktail for us, but it's a very masculine cocktail with a vinegar base. And most people hear vinegar and think, oh my God, I'd never drink that, one or two, put it in a cocktail. But in fact, classic properly fermented and barrel aged vinegars are sippable all by themselves, and vinegars as a base are an acid. So when you think about balanced cocktailing, you have a sweet, you have an alcohol, and you have an acid, traditionally, three kind of different components. And we simply sub the vinegar in for things like lime juice or lemon juice. Okay. So you do it at a much smaller quantity because the vinegar is so much more substantial in terms of flavor profile. But now there's so many beautiful new vinegars that use wines and beers and different bases as opposed to just a rice or a red wine vinegar. You can really bring a lot of complexity to a cocktail. So this one in particular takes about an ounce and a half of bourbon. We, of course, use our Ohio bourbon. Pair that with about a quarter ounce of a stout, a very rich molasses, almost chocolate-flavored stout vinegar that we produce at Middle West under the Tavern Vinegar label. About three quarters of an ounce of brown sugar, simple syrup, which is simply just half brown sugar and half water simmered on the stove, with a few dashes of a black walnut bitters, which is widely available at most of your kind of better independent liquor stores. Shake those all together in a shaker with ice and strain it over a nice big ice cube. And you've got something that is just round and full and chocolatey. And of course, it's got bourbon in it, which this season's
and
perfect.
Boozy.
And boozy.
Season,
yeah. And it responds in a way with that vinegar base that that brings all of that molasses and that cardamom and the flavors that otherwise you wouldn't get from simply adding a little bit of lemon. It's a really nice accompaniment to any. I would probably do this either very early in a dinner or potentially to finish one as opposed to serving it during.
Okay. And one is good.
Yeah.
It's not
I've been known to have more than one
okay.
of these.
Okay.
Especially if it follows dinner. Anything with that bourbon or the whiskey, and you know, not on my list today would even be something as simple as a dark bourbon hot chocolate. You know, three parts dark hot chocolate and one part bourbon, and you know, you can drink that at any point. It's a bit like macaroni and cheese, right? It's a bit of a comfort
well,
food.
Well, I sort of like hot apple cider and the same thing.
Yes,
yeah. You know, that's sort of to me, that's like. Yeah, okay, it's Monday. Okay, it's Tuesday. Okay, it's Wednesday. I just want to return the Fee Brothers Black Walnut Bitters. Mm-hmm. Black Walnut is bitter. Yeah. What are black walnut bitters?
Well,
is that just the juice of black walnuts?
It's simply been infused into the actual bitters base. So bitters have been around for centuries.
Right.
They're aromatics that are very high proof, but they can be added to any assortment of cocktails. And in fact, you know, most bartenders' philosophy these days are bitters make it better in everything.
Uh-huh.
And it's a rarity that it kind of at your more aspirational craft cocktail bars that you would have anything served these days without bitters in it. It brings a whole new level of complexity. And anytime we're doing cocktails out in kind of the public sector and people come back and be like, oh my God, this cocktail you made is so fantastic. I always say, one, of course, it's the alcohol. But two, it's that element of bitters that I think folks have to become, you know, once you become a little familiar with it, once you go with bitters, you never go back. It's and the bitters are available in hundreds of different mm-hmm. flavor bases, from vegetable roots to herbs to specialties from different regions in the
where
in the world.
Do you said the you said the Fee Brothers is easy to find.
Fee Brothers
but
is very easy
are
to
all,
find.
Are all these kinds
wine
of bitters?
Has a selection.
Oh, okay.
So
House Wine in Worthington.
Any of your better kind of again independent grocers or liquor retailers, yeah. Like a Weiland's, Huffman's, Hills, in the North Market, the Barrel Bottle.
All right.
They all carry them.
All right. If you're just joining us, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about holiday cooking and libations today. My guests right now, Tricia Wheeler of Edible Columbus and also the Seasoned Farmhouse in Clintonville, and Brady Konya. He is co-founder of Middle West Spirits. We're talking about libations now. So if you have a question or comment about what to drink or what to serve and when and how to pair it for your holiday meals ahead, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Now, this just sounds so darn pretty. Rosemary poinsettia.
Yeah, it sounds like a plant you'd probably put
in
the middle of your table.
A bubbly nod, you say, to the holiday season with bright notes of pomegranate and rosemary. Wow.
Yeah. Well, what about pomegranate and rosemary doesn't say the holiday?
Yeah.
We actually launched this cocktail back maybe two holidays ago at the North Market for one of the specialty events there with a lot of other local producers. And it's so much fun because it combines a couple of elements, not only those notes of rosemary and pomegranate, but the bubbles. I mean, when you think about the holidays, mm-hmm. for me, I instantly go to anything with a little bit of effervescence, champagne being the number one. And this really is the combination of each of those. So the rosemary poinsettia is 1.5 ounces of vodka paired with 1.5 ounces of pomegranate juice. And generally speaking, we use a less sweet variation of pomegranate juice when we make our recipes. So you can always add a little bit of simple or sweetness behind it.
Okay.
Once you start with something really sweet, you can never back out of it. So and then about 1/2 ounce of rosemary-infused simple syrup. So again, simple syrup, 50% water, 50% sugar.
That may bring enough sugar
simmered,
to the game right
yep.
there. Okay.
Simmered on the stove with a little bit of rosemary in it to taste. I usually leave it on a low heat with the rosemary actually sitting in it.
Fresh rosemary.
Fresh rosemary, very important. And then a squeeze of fresh lime, usually less than 1/4 ounce. It's just to add a little bit of acid to it. So you build those first four ingredients into a mixing tin. You shake lightly, pour over fresh ice, and then top off with a float of Brut champagne. Again, we always tend to go with a Brut as opposed to a sweet because, you know, sweet
balance.
Is sweet. Balance. And it just and then we garnish with what we call a rosemary lime boat. And that literally is like a lime wheel, right? A little round lime. You cut that in half, and then you poke a sprig of rosemary in the top, and it floats right on the top like a little sailboat.
It's all about the details. I love it.
And I think it's really important that, you know, when we talk about garnishes, garnishes, especially when you're entertaining in the holidays, aren't just about making your cocktail look pretty. A beautifully balanced, crafted cocktail has the same distinct elements that a beautiful spirit does. It has a nose, you know, a character and a finish, or a beginning, middle, and end. And those garnishes frequently produce a significant amount of aromatics that when you bring the glass up to your nose, that's the first thing you get. And whether it's a margarita with a little cilantro on the nose, right, or in this case, a champagne pomegranate cocktail with a little bit of rosemary at the front end, it's a nice compliment.
That's something I always teach about garnishes, that it should relate to the dish. When people are thinking like, oh, I need a garnish, you know, I should be a note that's in the dish or something that relates to the dish, not just a lemon wedge or a.
It's not,
you know,
just for looks.
For looks, it should relate.
And it adds that whole celebratory note that, you know, when you're entertaining, I always kind of have this general rule of thumb that if I have less than six or eight people, I'll make all of my bases for the cocktails in advance, and then I'll make them on site when they arrive. But if it's over eight people, I will batch a base of cocktails, and then I'll focus really just on the finishing with the garnishes while your friends and family are there. And I'd never, you know, I enjoy listening to, especially the early parts of the segment when you talk about entertaining at home, and I think Joan was talking about having her friends and family in the kitchen while she's making things on, for some of these events. And cocktails are the exact same way. I think people like to see you in the process of making it. Just, I think only those instances where it's a small enough group where you don't end up standing in the kitchen the whole night making them like I have in the past. so yeah, a good six or eight servings. Once you get north of that, you know, all of these cocktails can be batched. It's very easy to kind of multiply them out.
And so yeah, you just multiply them out, and then you wait to add the champagne.
Yes.
You know, you wait to pour them over the ice, and then top it with the champagne.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right. And the garnish, rosemary lime boat. I love that. Vanilla sidecar. This sounds yummy.
Yeah, so the vanilla sidecar is one that we've had for a couple of years, and it's one of my all-time go-to favorites. I drink it year-round, but because of the base in it, we find it, I serve it for everything, whether it's, you know, it's Easter or Christmas or, yeah, exactly. But it's a classic cocktail. It goes back pre-prohibition. It literally, and it's a high-proof cocktail, by the way, if you're looking for one of those. It's very simple. It takes a honey vanilla bean vodka base. Again, this is our twist on it. It's the OYO honey vanilla bean vodka, 1 ounce, paired with 1 ounce of Cointreau Noir, which is a orange brandy.
Cointreau Noir, though?
Cointreau would be an orange Curacao. Cointreau Noir is there. It has brandy in it.
Okay.
So it would be like a Grand Marnier,
okay.
Or maybe a more affordable version of a Grand Gala.
Huh. Okay.
Where it takes the orange Curacao and the brandy combined. So just 1 ounce of each of those and a half an ounce of fresh lemon juice, shaken hard in a Boston shaker, and then strained into a coupe or a small martini glass. If you'd like to dress it up a little bit, we usually do a half rim of that glass with a little bit of sugar. At home in my house, we always have a little bit of vanilla bean-infused sugar. It gives it, again, a little bit of that aromatic.
Which is a good thing to do with your vanilla beans after you scrape them out. Just put them in your sugar and keep the pod,
the scraped out
bean and stuff.
Yeah.
I always have various little jars of vanilla sugar going in my cupboard, too.
Now, is this a dessert necessarily, or
I actually think that the vanilla sidecar could be either at the very beginning, at a midpoint, I think between dishes, before potentially the turkey. And I think it's harder if you're doing this for Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving is traditionally timed as one big moment where you sit down and everything's brought out at the same
time. Well, there's that other moment where I'm licking the whipping cream bowl.
I keep thinking talking about the vanilla sidecar, like I think that could go with the pumpkin pie.
And then I was going to say it's either a nice pairing with a white meat, or at the end, because again it's very high proof, you'd only do one or two of these, and it's a little sweet with the sugar on the edge, so it's a nice finish with your dessert.
It's nice.
We only have about a minute left, and we have to get to the hot apple toddy.
Mm-hmm.
A traditional hot toddy from the Midwest. I guess this is what I was talking about earlier
with your
twist on it.
Yeah.
And,
So a hot toddy traditionally uses water in it, but for our twist, it's a whiskey base hot apple toddy with apple cider. And I mean, what nice. In Ohio, when you move into the fall, what makes you think of that more than apples? We just do it such a great job here with apples. So it takes 2 ounces of that Ohio whiskey, 1 tablespoon of honey. And we have lots of great local honey here locally. Sometimes I'll even incorporate a little bit of sage infused honey from one of our local apiaries. A teaspoon of Demerara sugar, which is a raw sugar, simple, same recipe as the regular simple, but using a Demerara sugar. And 4 to 5 ounces of hot apple cider.
If people want to learn more about these recipes, are they on your website?
They are, every single one of them.
Well, then we'll post your website at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Brady, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Brady Konya, he's founder, co-founder of Middle West Spirits. Also with us, Tricia Wheeler. Thank you so
thanks
much,
for
Tricia.
Having me.
Tricia of Edible Columbus and also owner of Seasoned Farmhouse in Clintonville. Thanks to the Allsides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants Kiram Shaban, Julia Hyder, Andrew Zisler, and Leticia Wiggins. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of The Ohio State University.